My name is Gregory Russell. I'm a third-year PhD student at the University of Texas, Austin. My co-author, Joan Hughes, is a professor there with me. I'm here to talk to you today about I Teach and I Learn with iPads and secondary language arts. Before I get started talking about the study, I want to talk about a theoretical perspective really quickly. We view technology integration as a tool that can replace instruction, amplify instruction, or transform it in certain cases. Transformation really involves the changing of mental processes, different roles, or implementing new curriculum or content that previously wasn't available without the integration of technology. We also know that change is difficult. Transformative uses of technology in K-12 settings are rare for a number of reasons, mostly because there are barriers to change, including existing beliefs, organizational practices, etc., that are difficult to change. Something else important to know is that this is a study that looks at the first year of integration of a one-to-one iPad initiative at a high school. And we know that change takes time, so we weren't going into this expecting to see a great deal of transformative change, and I'll share with you what we found. The study takes place at Hilly High School, which is a high-performing, affluent suburban school serving about 2,500 students that are predominantly white. In fall of 2011, they adopted one-to-one iPads for all of their juniors and seniors and any sophomores that were taking junior or senior level classes. They invested in digital technology heavily prior to this with lots of smart boards, etc., and they used BYOD before this initiative as well. This is part of a larger ethnography, taking a look at the whole school, but we're focusing on English language arts here. And the two cases that we'll be talking about, Brett is a 15-year veteran. He teaches English 4, senior level English. He's also a football and baseball coach. He was really interested in finding cool ways to use the iPad to engage his students in learning. And his instruction tended to be very teacher directed. Julie was also a 17-year veteran at the school. She teaches English 4, but the AP level courses. She also does student council. I'll give that to her. She teaches four classes that are teacher-directed, similar to Brett's teaching style, but she also offers two alternative classes, same English AP class, but that have more student-centered and inquiry-based pedagogies. We looked at both. The data comes from biannual interviews with these teachers, along with numerous informal chats that happen on a regular basis, along with weekly classroom observations that include extensive field notes written right after the session occurred so that we could develop themes during data conduction and analysis. We coded with a priori codes from the existing literature and used open coding methods as well until we reached data saturation. The results were these five overlapping themes that I'll discuss in just a little second. But they are overlapping, just like the iPad does not exist by itself. It's part of a technology cluster and relies upon software, Wi-Fi, cameras, etc. None of these themes exist solely by themselves, and they really are integrated across each other. So first off, Hilly High School focuses on what they call the four C's, and I'll try to remember what they are so my notes are not here. Collaboration, creativity, communication, and critical thinking, which parallel a lot with how we define new media literacies, how Jenkins does, etc. The iPad obviously provides a lot of opportunities for students to create, to practice and develop these skills. For instance, they wrote scripts, filmed, edited, and published public service announcements based around the themes of the books that they were reading. Now, it's also a great way to publish and share materials due to the mobile nature. There's a lot of passing around the iPad so they could share work, and there's also the authentic publication online to places like YouTube. Now, that presents problems if you have student identifiable material in public spaces, but generally that was the student's choice, but still it's a concern. Another concern about this is that these new media literacy practices took extensive time to film, edit, and do this in a 50-minute context was difficult and challenging at times. And teachers experimented and did a little less or not.
What did I do?
Uh-oh.
Oh, it's gone.
It's gone.
Everyone's like, ah!
Second theme, magic manager. Yeah. Efficiencies. The iPad provided vast opportunities for more efficient classroom practices. Amplification of all these things. For example, communication was expedited through email. Probably the primary one that made things go the fastest was the use of cloud-based storage devices or cloud-based storage services to distribute materials, so teachers didn't have to spend time making copies or preparing for classes, and students spent minimal time, you know, searching for pens or lost assignments, etc., because everything was on their iPad, this one device. Teachers and students experimented with a large number of apps for teaching and learning. Some of them became part of regular classroom practices, others were used once, twice, and forgotten. Primarily, because of this is an English language arts classroom, students consumed a great deal of text and used their iPads as an e-reader, both for PDF versions of books, e-books, and consuming web-based text, but differently than what would have been a traditional textbook, because they're able to annotate, they're able to highlight, and do all these other activities that they wouldn't be able to do with the school-provided textbook. There was also a number of content-specific apps that were used, such as that script-writing app that scaffolded their task completion, or poetry apps that helped them discover new information that was of interest to them. But these were used less frequently than some productivity apps like email or internet browsers, etc., primarily because teachers had a difficult time identifying and finding them. They relied a great deal on students for app suggestions and collaboration amongst their peers. Also, some of the content-specific apps tended to be cost-prohibitive because, well, they weren't free all the time. Another challenge that's related, well, I'll get to that later. As the presenters have talked about before, high school students and students today expect technology to be integrated in their classroom, just like it is everywhere else in their lives. So having iPads obviously makes it, can facilitate the integration and use of this iPad for engagement. And students were able to personalize this iPad at this school, which helped increase their control and engagement with the material itself, and as well as just all the affordances provided by apps like YouTube or the rich media available online, etc., can be very engaging to these students. Now, as much as it can engage students with the learning, a common concern mentioned by some others here is that putting these devices in the hands of students is going to engage them in off-task behaviors. So I'll talk about that really quickly. Our data shows that the use of iPads in these classrooms did not increase off-task behavior. There was a novelty effect probably for the first couple weeks where there was more instances of it, but as the year progressed, distractibility levels were consistent with non-iPad classes. And it's important to note too that when distraction occurred during class time was primarily during whole class teacher-directed activities, suggesting that it might be the pedagogy and not the device that led students to distraction and off-task behavior. A primary concern of the teachers though, they became less worried about distraction and more worried about academic dishonesty. At the beginning of the year, they started to do assessments that replicated what they would do offline. And they were finding that students were taking screenshots and sending it to each other. They were using the internet or chatting with each other, using Twitter to share and, you know, thwart these. And there was rampant cheating at Hilly High, especially since it's a high performing and the kids all want their A's, etc. So this is not specific to just ELA, but it was school-wide. And part of the challenge in dealing with that is that there was very little time for professional development before they were distributed in the summer. And during the course of the year, they had one less prep time than usual because of budget cuts. Additionally, they didn't have an instructional technologist because of budget cuts. And they were willing to do all this and make sacrifices for a couple of years so that they could get, you know, 1,200 iPads into the school. They did experiment with a variety of apps to try and thwart the cheating. Using Google Forms, they would change the background of the color, so if they saw like a pink screen, they knew that, oh, someone's looking at first period test versus a blue screen the second period. But overall, they really, it was so frustrating that they reverted for a lot of summative assessments back to paper-based practices. Now, the implications for this is that, yes, iPads have tremendous potential for educational use. I think we're all here because we think that or hope that. And consistent with the literature on change, the earliest uses of the iPad for technology integration were replicating offline practices and the amplification of these activities. But through experimentation and hopefully some greater research into the subject, we'll be able to identify best practices that are more transformative or amplify what we know already. And it's important to know that, you know, we need to learn from these risk takers. This school went out on a limb to make this tremendous investment without research-based pedagogies or practices or understanding what to expect fully, and we need to take every opportunity we can to learn from these risk takers. And it's important to know that we also support them. They were hampered by a lack of professional development and support staff, although they did have amazing infrastructure that facilitated Wi-Fi, et cetera, seamlessly. Future studies need to include more data from students as well as other community members and content areas. And I think it's important to note that this is in a predominantly white, suburban, affluent, high-performing school. So we need to focus on how these tools might be able to work in other contexts to help close the achievement gap or up other students succeed that may not be already succeeding at a high level like these students were. And especially, it's nice to see that there's already being some research done on learning outcomes attached to the use of iPads as well. And more research needs to go into those specifics. If you'd like to connect with us, here's our emails. This will be published as a chapter in Charles Miller's and Aaron Doering's upcoming book, The New Landscape of Mobile Learning. You can we put all these, the presentation and a proof of the chapter, as well as the image credits, etc., because I like Creative Commons, on a tinyurl.com/iPadsARA2013. And that's it.
When you were in the school, you said that the Wi-Fi was working perfectly fine. Was that something that was taken into account before the iPads went in, or was it like just something existing that happened before?
The school. He asked whether how the Wi-Fi was set up. Did they anticipate that prior to? And yes, I think the school focused mostly on the infrastructure prior to the implementation of this. So there was less professional development, but they made sure that all their ducks were in a row to make sure that the technology actually worked, and they hoped that you could kind of experiment. We'll figure it out as we go, as long as it works.
Did you have any indicators of impact on student learning in terms of progress towards graduation or test scores or anything like that, as opposed to engagement and the efficiencies provided and so on and so on?
I can't speak statistically on it. There were instances, though, and I should have mentioned this earlier, so thank you for reminding me, where even the replication of offline assignments on the iPad resulted in an increase in the quality and quantity of responses. For example, like on reflections to literature, at the end of the class, one of the teachers would ask you to write a reflective response. And when she did it by hand, it was a struggle to get students to write, you know, a sentence or two. But once the iPads were integrated and you emailed it, then she was receiving paragraphs that were, you know, longer, but more well thought out and more well written. So there's indicators that it hopefully will work, but I can't speak to that specifically.
And did you look at how, I don't know if you had very many sheltered classes at that school, so I don't know what the ELL rate was, but what about special needs?
It's integrated, but I do not have that information. There's not a large number of ELLs at this school.
Actually, what about the special needs students?
Yeah, the special needs. We have another graduate student who followed special needs classes, and so we could share. She presented that recently at a different conference. So if you get in touch with me, I can give you that paper that's in development.
Sorry.
Yes. Right. And there was less problems when there was open-ended assessments, right? It was more with the traditional, there's one answer, fill in the blank, et cetera. And they did, and they did more along the lines of media creation and things along those lines. But still, it is a school that cares about testing and doing well on testing. So there's still an inkling that we need to have these traditional assessments in the classroom.
Okay.